you remember the tissue culture lab bubble of the 90s?
Not specifically.
Got quite competitive. The capacity of all the labs in the country exceeded the total demand by a factor of somewhere between 300 and 1,000.
Whoops.
And it looks to me like stereolithography is on the same route.
Well, that's why, I mean, I've got a 3D printer, but I would be very hesitant to start a business around 3D printing. The capital equipment can be relatively inexpensive today. When I started using 3D printers, it was in the late 80s to early 90s. And that was when Charles Hull was starting to commercialize his SLA machine, and Carl Decker was starting to commercialize his SLS machine, selective laser sintering, where he could bond together powders, whether they were metal or wax. And those machines were $300,000, $700,000 a copy. And a few people certainly started businesses around that, and boy, let me tell you, you used to pay a tremendous amount of money for a 3D printed object. Today, what I could buy for $220 would probably cost $1,500 back then because of the newness of the technology and the expense of the powders or the photoreactive polymer or what. That stuff was $1,000 a gallon. And it took 5 gallons to charge the machine before you even turned it on. Well, today, 3D printing, again, for just small dollars in a relative sense, you can have this equipment. But at the same time, one of my recent clients just said, just send it to ZoomRP. Now, ZoomRP were in Florida. They're still in Florida, but they've since been bought up by Stratasys, which is a huge 3D printing company, and they're headquartered about 2 miles that way. And they have a service bureau about 3 miles that way, and there's 150 to 200 printing machines running 24/7 right off of Wallace Road. And they ship that stuff worldwide. Now with ZoomRP, you would just go online. From the CAD design, you would extract what's called the STL file. You just email that to them and say, build me one of those. And before you ask them to build it, you submit it, and they say, that's going to cost $68. And you can get that information back in about 20 seconds. And you click buy. What color? Blue. When do you want it? Tomorrow? Done. FedEx box shows up on your door tomorrow with your widget inside of it. So, again, unless you're thinking about competing with these giants, you know, to start a little mom-and-pop place in Minneapolis probably isn't going to fly because you've got a world competitor right down the road. And the same thing held true in the old days with computer-controlled machines. These things were $500,000 for a CNC milling machine or a CNC lathe, and today you can buy these things for $12,000, and they're pretty nice. But again, you have to decide what you think the market can bear, what is lacking in the marketplace. Well, today, 3D printing is not lacking in the marketplace. There are dozens of online services that will do 3D printing in any of the technologies, including sintered metals. I can have it printed on an objet machine in a photopolymer. I can have it printed in wax. I can have it printed in a UV curable polymer. I can have it made by the hot melt glue gun, gone computer control, fused deposition modeling. I can have things laser cut. I can have stuff CNC machined. I have to do is flip open a web browser, and there are all of those services worldwide. I just submit a file, say how many, what color, buy. Done. Give them a credit card number. You're finished. Any other questions?
You're talking about outsourcing a service, a 3D printing. Are there other things that you outsource? Other activities that are part of your business or something that you don't do all the time?
There are. The one thing that I will outsource that I thought I was going to do in-house many, many years ago, 12 years ago now, 14, one of the things that I focus on to help differentiate the services that I provide for my base of clients is reverse engineering. There are a number of instances where someone, and I'm always hoping that it's not for nefarious purposes, but somebody might say, I really like this coffee cup. I want a CAD model. I want a computer design of that coffee cup. Well, one of the things you'll start with is laser scanning it. Well, I bought a laser scanner in 2005, I think. And I thought, this is cool, I can do this stuff. Well, it really didn't work very well. But there are four, at least, service bureaus in the Twin Cities that do laser scanning. So, again, from a business perspective, and let's say it's just the red part of the body. I would give that to one of these four or five companies from Plymouth to Bloomington to Maple Grove and just say, scan that. And they'll charge me about $400. And they'll give me 2.9 million points. The laser will scan that surface and it'll map out 2 to 3 million points. Well, some of the software that I have allows me to do something intelligent with those millions of points, and I can recreate that shape to within 3/1000ths of an inch and provide that data file to whomever was asking for it. That software today is about $32,000 to do that. So I have that software. It was somewhat painful to buy that as well. But now in that scenario, you might think, well, you're just stealing their design. But more often than not, what happens is there's a tool that they have that has been producing a metal forging or a plastic injection molded part, and the tool, for whatever reason, there was never CAD data because the thing was built in 1965, and it's finally wearing out. And they've made hand corrections to that tool. So they have no control over the design intent of whatever that tool was producing. It might be a forging die for hip stems. It could be a forging die for pliers. It could be anything. It's their design, it's their data, it's their product, so they're not stealing from anybody, but they need to find out what the nature of those design changes were done by hand in this $60,000, $70,000, $80,000 tool. Somebody went in with a die grinder and went, boy, this part's just not coming out of this die, so I'm gonna hand grind some relief right here. Well, you have no idea what they've done. They've solved the problem because now the part comes out of the tool when the press opens up. But you don't know what he did by this hand grinding operation. He solved the problem. But what are you going to do when that die needs to be remade? How are you going to capture this? Well, you can capture it by scanning it with a laser and modeling that geometry and then saying, I can show you exactly where he hand ground it, because I can see where it deviates from the rest of the nature of the curvature of that particular area of the tool. I can see where he ground it. I can light it up and point right at it. It's right there. So laser scanners, to answer your question, would be something that I thought I was going to do in-house. I'd sub any laser scanning out. they will employ laser scanners that will range from $15,000 to $250,000. And I just hand it to them, and I get the benefit of a $250,000 machine, the output from it, for $400. And it's done in 3 days. So that would be the one other thing that I would outsource. And right here in the Twin Cities, we have one of the original laser scanning bureaus down in Bloomington. They developed laser scanners in the 80s, and it was kind of comical because there was no software that could do anything with these hundreds of thousands or millions of data points. Just people would bring it into Excel spreadsheets. I never really understood that, but that's what Red Wing Shoe was trying to do years ago. Just bizarre. So, yeah, you can outsource a bunch of this stuff, but what I typically provide to my clients is the basis of my education and my experience about how to get their widget designed properly so that it's manufacturable at the lowest price point and it meets all of the design criteria that they want this thing to meet. And those are the types of services that I help them with. And it's a ton of fun.
What's the most unique product you've worked on?
Dead body. There was a company that said, well, you do CAD modeling? And I'm like, yeah. And they said, well, and you can take in laser scan data or CT data from a scan, medical scan? Yes, I can do that. Well, we'd like you to model this thing for us. I'm like, I'd love to. Well, we have two cadavers. There was a male and a female. They had expired in their 70s. And this company was developing an implant that would either go into the carotids or the jugglers. And they said, well, we can just provide you with the data. Or you can come watch us collect the data. And I thought, well, this would be fun. Let's go do that. So I cruised up to Brooklyn Park, and in a strip mall, you would never know that there is a full-blown operating room, two doors beyond that glass door, full-blown operating room. And I walk in there, and there's a great big body bag. And I'm like, well, okay, that's interesting. And it was on a C-frame table, which is the CT scanner. It has the emitter and the collector, and it kind of goes around you on the table. And they wanted to scan from here to here because they wanted to know where these implants were relative to that person's anatomy, relative to landmarks, say the center of the ear or wherever, because they wanted to use it for training. So I'm looking at this individual on the table, and I'm like, and this bag's open, and they were kind enough to put a little cloth over their face, so you're not really looking down. But they were opened up from here to here, and there were guide wires sticking out all over the place. I'm just like, oh, that's interesting. And I'm like, well, the bag is a little deflated down here. What's up with that? Well, this is a partial. He doesn't have any legs. We cut those off. Okay, that's nice. So they got done with the guy, zipped him up, put him on a gurney, grabbed the lady, put her on the table, and so I made CAD models of these two individuals. Now, the cloth over the face doesn't hide the data, so I could see from my CAD model exactly what that guy looked like, even though there was a drape all the way over his head. You couldn't see anything from here up. But I could see his face in my CAD model. That's what he looked like. It was pretty interesting. And I did that as a challenge because I thought, well, this is going to be quite binary. I'm either going to walk in and go, this is nice, or I'm going to walk in and I'm going to throw up. So I thought, well, this is a test. I'm going to see what's going to happen. Well, I didn't throw up. Kind of a tough guy. And I think I was talking with the anatomist. He's a medical doctor, but he knows everything by name. Well, that's your humerus, lecthimus, dorsal. He knew every part of everything in the body. And he was there to dissect and insert and extract and do whatever. And I'm like, it doesn't smell funny. I kind of muttered it. He goes, oh, it's a fresh cadaver. Oh, okay, great. Because I thought there was going to be a funky smell. There was none. Thank God, otherwise I would have been racing for the trash can and embarrassed myself. But that might have been one of the more interesting things that I've fiddled with. I've designed any number of odd things. There was a point in time in my office where I was, there'd be a heart valve here that I was working on the design, and over here on a shelf was an AK-47. And then he shipped me a 9mm Glock, and he wanted that to do something different for a tactical team somewhere doing something. So heart valves to handguns, police and military targeting systems, special machines, hips, knees, shoulders, fingers, spinal fusion, catheters, ophthalmic instruments that make slices into your eyeball. That was odd. Just interesting stuff. And you get to do these interesting things when you're an independent and you can convince somebody that, again, you're the right resource at the right time, at the right price point, with the right skill set to do what they need to have done. So it's been a ton of fun. And I'll keep doing it until I can't do it anymore. Yes?
What do you do if something's just too technically challenging and you don't think you have the right skills for it, for some of these amazing things?
I'll be the first one to tell them that. Yeah, I'm never going to oversell, and I have never oversold myself. I will tell them that, you know, this aspect of this project is going to be a little stretch for me. I've done some work here, say, programming PLCs as an example. You know, I've programmed 2 or 3 PLCs, but I'm not a PLC programmer. I've designed molds, but I'm not a mold designer. And so I'll just be up front with them saying, you know, this aspect over here is a little stretch, but I can get it done. I can figure this out. And if they go, yeah, that's fine. Or if they're hesitant, they say, well, we need somebody that's an expert in this. Then that's not me. I can work on these things if you want to break the project up. But if you really want someone that's good at that finite element analysis, or I can do the finite element modeling, but the finite element analysis where you interpret the computer output as to whether or not this hip stem is going to buckle and break under load, I'm not the right guy. I believe that if you're going to play in that arena appropriately, you better have a doctorate in structural mechanics before you start rendering opinions as to whether or not the computer says this hip stem is going to hold that patient up or not over 15 years.
You don't use Pro-E?
I started with Pro-E. That was the $26,000 worth of software running on a $24,000 workstation. Pro-E today is rapidly becoming an also RAN design tool. There are many other tools that have surpassed it, most notably SolidWorks, and to a lesser degree, Solid Edge, Siemens NX. AutoCAD has a few products that work well in this arena. And the world of CAD is changing from these painfully expensive perpetual licenses, where I bought Pro-E at $24,000 or $26,000, whichever one it was. Now I own that design tool forever. It doesn't time out. It doesn't go away. It's always there on my system. It's on my system today.
Price has gone way up.
Well, they lowered their price down to about $5,000 from roughly, say, $25,000 because of SolidWorks. They came into the marketplace at $5,000. PTC, the people that created Crow Engineer, which is now called Creo, why they did that, I have no idea. And so they said, well, we really can't sell our stuff for $25,000 if these guys over here are selling their stuff that the marketplace is perceiving as being just as good as our $25,000 stuff for $5,000. So their price came down to $5,000 quite quickly. Now, they simplified it, and they took many of the modules out of it.
They made a million modules out of one.
Oh, yeah. If you buy all the Pro-E modules, it's probably $150,000 to $200,000.
Yeah, right.
If you buy everything, the CNC code generator, the analysis, the FEA, FEM module, the visualization tools, the industrial design tools, yeah, you'll spend well over $100,000.
Oh, yeah.
And that's kind of hard to do for someone that's choosing to start a business. I mean, I spent a ton of money, but I thought it was unique enough that I would get that money back, and in part and parcel I have. But the model is changing to where you don't own the software anymore. You rent it.
Rent a seat.
You rent a seat, and that code could execute on your machine, or the other popular thing that's happening is it only fires in the cloud. Your data and the application that creates your data is up there somewhere.
Yes, yes.
Now, some of those are free. Onshape is one of the newer entrants into that marketplace, and it's free for non-commercial use. Fusion 123 from Autodesk is free for non-commercial use. And I think Onshape, to rent a commercial license monthly is $200 maybe, but you know, so to get the full package, maybe $400, you've got a $50,000 kit of software, but you're only paying $400 a month for it. It's more affordable for a startup because you don't have that giant cash outlay. You just got to come up with $400 a month to pay for your CAD tools. Very affordable. I don't like the notion of cloud only. I have a pretty good feeling that when I turn this thing on, it's going to turn on. And when it doesn't turn on, I'm going to disconnect it, and I'm going to go down to the Microsoft store, and I'm going to say, this doesn't work. I need a new one right now. And I can solve that problem quickly. If I lose internet connectivity, I'm dead in the water. I have no access to my data, and I have no access to the application to create or modify my data that's up there somewhere. That doesn't make me feel comfortable at all. So I don't, as of yet, subscribe to the subscription services. But I've focused on SolidWorks just because that's where the bulk of my clients expect their design work to be done. It's just the most commonly used, or one of the most commonly used design tools out there. So when I do my design work in SolidWorks and I give it to a machine shop that also uses SolidWorks, they have no problem in interpreting and opening my drawing file and then creating the computer code to run the computer controlled machine that's going to mill my widget, whatever that happens to be. So there's no loss of data integrity. There's no loss in the translation from Pro-E to SolidWorks to IronCAD to Fusion to something else. It's all a homogeneous environment, and the data, the kernel that the data is based on is identical. So there are no translation issues. So for ease of use, price point, and power, SolidWorks has percolated to the top, and as they've gone up, ProE has gone down. Like I said, I started all of my business on ProE. And that's what, in the old days, Medtronic was 100% ProE, Honeywell was 100% ProE, Caterpillar was 100% ProE, and that has been changing. You'll find licenses of SolidWorks at Medtronic today. And they have to deal with the internal translation issues when the design group hands the design to the analysis group and they're using two different kits. Sometimes they have to remodel it, which is twice the effort to get the job done.
Well, does SolidWorks address issues like stress analysis and heat transfer?
Absolutely. Okay. Yeah, they call it simulation.
Yeah.
That's the simulation module. I don't know that they do nonlinear. You might need a MARC, M-A-R-C, or an ANSYS kind of a product, and each of those things are $30,000 to $50,000 all by themselves. Yeah. But if you need that level of performance like Medtronic would, then they buy a license. But SolidWorks has, I think, 2 to 3 offerings. Within my license, I have access to a low subset of simulation tools. I can model an I-beam, and I can weld it onto an immovable object, and I can put a car on the end of it 18 feet away, and it'll tell me how much it's going to droop by the weight of the car sitting on the beam 18 feet away.
Nice simple cantilever, yeah.
Well, and you can do that out of your Marx Mechanical Engineering Handbook, but now let's say that this I-beam is some amoeba-looking thing. Now, Marx isn't going to help you there, but a SolidWorks kind of a tool, or ProE would certainly do that for you. And then they get much more, and I'm massively simplifying these things, but you can do very complicated analysis of stress and strain and deformation, and you can get a sense of when something will fatigue from cycling. If I take a hip stem that's made out of titanium and I do this to it 500,000 times, it might break. This software will give me an idea that break point will happen at 5 million cycles, and 5 million cycles for that patient, or a classic, typical patient, that might be 20 years of walking. And that's going to be a safe bet, especially if the patient is 68 years old. Just picking numbers here, folks. But otherwise, what are you going to do? You're going to make a hip stem, you're going to put it on a test rig, and you're going to do this until it breaks. It might take 5 years. And you've got a sample of one. Well, is this hip stem going to act just like that one? You have no idea. Are you going to put this hip stem inside of your body as a 38-year-old and expect to walk for the next 40 years? I might want a little more analysis done as to what's going to hold up to the stress and strain of me walking on it for a long time. So those are the tools you would employ to get those answers. Yes?
Do you allocate time for learning the new software or as a needed basis?
Yes and yes. SolidWorks and many of those types of CAD tools will come out with typically an annual release. So right now I'm on 2016. This fall they'll release 2017. Next fall they'll release 2018. And every time they do that, they inject typically more functionality. And so I have to spend some time figuring out what that new functionality is. Sometimes I will take an afternoon and just explore the new software or the new features within the software. And, of course, when I'm doing that, my billable hour clock is not running. I'm charging nobody to do that. That's just downtime. That's a cost of doing business. But I will find time and I'll explore something that looks interesting to me, that it's a function that I can leverage into a better design experience for my client by knowing how that works. And I try to do the 30,000 foot level, that viewpoint that says, boy, I need to learn about that and that and that really well, because I think that will turn my, it'll help me come up with better designs. But this and this and this and this, I can ignore those because there's nothing applicable to what I'm using this design tool for. There are so many features inside of any one of these design tools that you could spend a half a lifetime just fiddling around and seeing what they do. So I focus on part model creation and assemblies of those parts, and this is all electronic, of course, and drawings of the parts and drawings of the assemblies, and that becomes the design documentation file. And in the medical device world, that's called a design history file, and the FDA wants to see that in a file folder, in a file cabinet, somewhere, before they will approve that device, whatever that device happens to be. So you have to show them the design history file, show them where you started, show them where you got to where you are today, show them the testing, both physical and computational, that you've done that shows that this device is ready for prime time, whether it's a hip stem or a cheek implant. Any other questions?